Good morning, everyone. If anyone has any tips on the meters on Central Avenue, that would be very helpful.
Don't get caught.
Pay them.
I wish we could pay them. That's the easiest way, theoretically, but that's generally not the case. Okay. So today we're going to discuss a topic that I hope is not relevant, but it always becomes somewhat relevant at times of great challenge. And that is when God says no, as you see from the source sheet. The title really comes from the words of Nachshon Waxman's mother, who famously responded this way to a news reporter in 1994. As most of you remember, Nachshon Waxman, who was an Israeli army corporal, was abducted by terrorists in 1994, and they demanded that by Friday of the next week that a certain ridiculous number of terrorists would be released, otherwise they would kill him. And Nachshon's family turned to the public, and they asked them to do whatever they could, whatever mitzvos, whatever Torah, a tiny fraction of what we're seeing today, but a glimpse of what would be. I remember stories of the people would get into taxis, and the taxi driver would say, "I'm driving, so I can't say Tehillim." Probably some of them did that. Also, at the same time, I said, "Your job is to say Tehillim in the back of the taxi." And that Thursday night, a few hours before the ultimatum, there was a whole famous scene at the Kotel. It was about 100,000 people came to the Kotel, all different kinds of Jews, Sephardim, Ashkenazim, Hasidim, people who otherwise wouldn't visit the Kotel for davening. And overnight, they had figured out where Nachshon was, and they staged a raid, and Nachshon was killed in that raid, along with another soldier. And today, unfortunately, we've become numbed to what it means that an Israeli is killed by Hamas, or even that a soldier is killed by Hamas. There are, al tiftach peh, nisim v'neflos going on every single day in Gaza. We hear and we mourn when we see a candle, we see on the thing, they see a candle on your feed, you realize that one of the soldiers was killed. You can never say only X number of soldiers were killed. But given the number of terrorists that are being killed and given the dangers in Gaza, we shouldn't be blind to the miracles that are going on there. I, along with you, were hoping this would be one of those wars where it was so clear that God's hands was there. Not a single soldier died. Every single person returned untouched. That level of hashkacha we're not zocha to in our time. But it shouldn't blind us from the fact that they are in an active war zone and thousands of people, thousands of terrorists are being killed. And the number is what it is in terms of those from Tzahal who've had to be korbanos at this time. But the tragedy at the time was compounded really by the theological aspects of what had happened. There was clearly a tremendous, tremendous awakening, which we would see again with the three boys who were taken hostage many years later, a tremendous awakening. In that case, in the case of the boys, we found out that they were killed right away. A different question, where did Tfilos go and we don't realize that they're needed anymore? But in the case of Nachshon Waxman, he was alive when all of these tefillos were going on. And an anti-religious, it seems from his question, that the tone of his question, if you remember at the time, turned to Nachshon's mother and said, "What happened with all of those tefillos?" First of all, how anyone could say that to the mother. "But what happened with all of those tefillos? Where was God?" And she answered, as only an Israeli mom can. She looked him in the eye and said, "God heard the prayers, he listened, and he said no." He doesn't always say no, he doesn't always say yes to our prayers. And that is sort of the title of the shir, "When God Says No." This is a more famous Hasidish Maisa that someone once spoke to a Hasidish Rebbe. My Yiddish is very schwach. But in Yiddish is needed for this, and they said that the Eibishter for Emfednisht, Eibishter didn't didn't answer. And he answered, the Eibishter v'emferd nisht. It only works in Yiddish. V'emferd nisht means didn't answer. And v'emferd nisht means he answered, no. And that's one of the things that I do want to talk about, is when God says no and how to understand that. But the reality is that such a simple answer doesn't do enough very often for our emunah. Because if God is just free to say no, and he says no regularly, it kind of cuts away at our ability to daven. So I want to discuss this very difficult topic. Maybe I never seem to know how long these topics are going to take, but I think it's something that we all think about, and I think it's something that's important to think about. But even though we're in a time of crisis, we're not necessarily in a time of such theological crisis, certainly not about prayer. And now is the time to discuss things like this. This is a chapter in a sefer that I'm coming out with, and this chapter begins by saying that this is not something you should turn a friend to while they're sitting Shiva. At times of theological crisis, that is not the time to build up our spiritual reserves and our theological reasoning. When tragedy strikes, and the questions that we have because tragedy strikes are best not answered at the moment. One needs to prepare themselves. One needs to be ready for that moment at other times. And then when they get to that moment, then they're ready to proceed through that moment with faith. The most famous example I can give you, of course, is that of Rabbi Akiva. The famous story of Rabbi Akiva on his deathbed. They come to Rabbi Akiva, and they're flaying his flesh. And Rabbi Akiva is reciting the Shema, his faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one of his students turns to Rabbi Akiva and says, Ad Kan? Seriously? Seriously, that's what you're saying at this moment? And he says, my whole life I was wondering when I'd be able to be Mekayim the mitzvah of martyrdom. And here I am, so I shouldn't accomplish it? I don't think he said it in that tone of voice. That's what the Gemara says. What did Rabbi Akiva mean? Rabbi Akiva meant that moments of faith, one proceeds through them because of a lifetime of faith. It meant that Rabbi Akiva didn't just, he wasn't looking forward to die. We don't put a high emphasis on martyrdom, even though we know there is a mitzvah sometimes to die al kiddush Hashem, but we don't look forward to that. Doesn't mean that Rabbi Akiva looked forward to a time when he could die. We don't have such an idea that we want to be a martyr. That's ridiculous. But what Rabbi Akiva was saying was, what do you think I was thinking every single day when I said the Shema? When you say, I should love God, one has to love God with all of their soul. And the Gemara says, even if he has to take away your soul. So what am I thinking when I say Shema? I don't know. Whatever's going on around me is what I'm thinking when I'm saying Shema. Rabbi Akiva said, every single day when I said Shema, I prepared for a moment for the possibility that this would be the end. Do you know that the Mishnah Berurah actually says that? When you say the Pasuk of Shema Yisrael, that whatever it is comes only from God, you're actually supposed to, every single time you say it, stop for 1 second and say, if I were asked to give up my life, I would. It's actually, the Mishnah Berurah says, on regular recitation of Kriya Shema. Rabbi Akiva is saying that every day when I said Kriya Shema, I was paying attention. And I was reinforcing in my mind. So if you want to know how I'm pulling it off at this moment, the answer is I'm not pulling it off at this moment. I'm 120 years old, and I've spent at least the last 80, if not the first 40, I've spent the last 80 years wondering if I, not looking forward to this, but wondering if I'd face it. And now that I'm here, therefore I'm able to go through it. So topics like this, and this is a series on tefillah, not so much theology, but tefillah is so central to what we believe about God and our relationship to God. So they're best discussed, it is a time of crisis, but not necessarily a time of tefillah crisis. They're best discussed at times when we can let it sink in for times later. There are a couple of other introductory remarks before getting into such a powerful, I think it is an inspiring, I don't think it's a depressing topic, but such a powerful topic. Number two is that any question that starts with the word why and has the word God in it, the answer is, I don't know. Right? I mean, we have to put that out there. This will be probably a week or two of these very, very interesting discussions, but the answer really is that we don't know. Things happen for multitude of reasons that we can't possibly understand. And it's helpful for us to look at answers because we need them, because we're people, because we're real, and our relationship with God should be real. But at the same time, we need to know, we don't really know. We can make suggestions, and we can try to fit a particular situation to maybe that's what's going on. But of course, we don't really know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does that. The third thing I think that needs to be said in this context, and the introductions are, I think, important, so it's good to spend time on it, is that when we speak of the theological problem of tefillos that are answered no or not answered in our minds, we have to first state, before we get into some of the approaches, that we don't believe that the ultimate purpose of davening is to get something, is to get a result. Even if we have, and it seems we have very little control if a prayer is answered yes or no, but the concept that a prayer was wasted, which was really the question that was given to Esther Waxman, as to whether or not a tefillah was wasted, we don't believe that the ultimate purpose of a tefillah is to get something other than to get closer to Hashem. The reason why we pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not so that he will give us anything in particular, but so that we will remember that he is the one that gives us whatever we get. That's very different. It's not to get a particular result, but to constantly remind ourselves that he is the one who provides us with whatever it is. By asking of him, we remind ourselves that he's the one that has it, that he's the one that can provide it. The Mabit, Rav Yosef of Trani, in the 1500s, the Mabit pointed out how absurd it is that we keep asking Hashem for the same things again and again in every Shemoneh Esrei. And it's even worse at what we call today, it's not so clear they always had this institution, but what we call today Mincha Ma'ariv, right? Mincha Ma'ariv is a crazy institution. We're supposed to really daven once in the morning and once in the afternoon and once at night. Every section of our day is supposed to be involved with a tefillah. The current institution, which I participate in as much as anyone else, of Mincha Ma'ariv, you finish, Yiskadel, Oseh Shalom, V'hurachum, and that. That's not what Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were thinking when they were thinking of the three tefillos. But okay, they technically hit the right time zones. But you ever think how strange it is that we, let's say, for example, ask for Mashiach to come at Mincha, at a Mincha Ma'ariv. We ask that, God Baruch Hu should bring Mashiach, at Semach David, right? Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. And then, 5 minutes later, we ask him again, is Mashiach coming? We're like the kid in the back seat, are we there yet? Right? What would HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Baruch Hu says, this Penner, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. You know the state of Israel? That was established. Then it was 67. You know, I'm clearly working on this. But like seriously, between the time that you daven Mincha and the time you daven Ma'ariv, you expected me to bring it? What are you asking me for again? The Mabit says it's almost insulting. How many times can you knock on, he's the king of the universe. How many times can you knock on his door and say, oh, by the way, can you just ask me? I'm working on it. I'm on it. So the Mabit says that it's not that God needs the reminder. It's that every few minutes I need the reminder that he's the one that can bring these things. So every time we go through the list of the requests, we're effectively reminding him ourselves that he's the one that provides us with knowledge. He's the one that provides us with health. He's the one that provides us with wealth. He's the one that moves Jewish history. And if you don't think that we need a reminder of that every 5 or 10 minutes, so now you understand. Rabbi Yochanan says in the Gemara, Ulavai, it would be good, Shiyaspalel Adam Kol Hayom Kulo. It would be great if we were always davening. He doesn't mean that we shouldn't tend to our lives, but it means a state of davening. Halavai, we would always be, and by the way, you can do this by talking to God outside of the formal tefillos. Outside of the formal tefillos. In last week's parsha, when Avimelech says to Avraham, I want to be your peace partner, sort of, first Palestinian peace partner, coming from the Plishtim, I want to be your peace partner. So he says, I want to be peace partner because I see that God is always with you. So the Medrash says, how exactly did this idol-worshipping Russia know? How did he knew what to look for? He knew how to be a mashkiach ruchani and know that. So the Medrash says, because Avraham Avinu, everything he did, he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help. Every single action that he did, as he's walking to do it, he said, could you give me a hand? Could you help me? Could you help me? Yeah. So that's what he means. In other words, that's what Rabbi Yochanan means. Not that we have 82 tefillos hayom, but that we're in a constant state that we recognize is there. So even as we ask why sometimes it seems that he is silent, and even as we acknowledge that if he's always silent, it's not going to work for us. Because I know I am, and I assume you're not at a level where our tefillah can stay strong if we never feel that he's listening, if we never feel that it makes a difference. The fact that it's getting us closer to him is for us is a side effect. But we view it as a give and take, or a give and, or a pray and receive, I call it. A pray and receive. It's got to be some reciprocal relationship in order to keep it going. The last thing, which is a word of introduction, is that one of the reasons that we struggle so much with the challenge of unanswered prayers is because we are concerned that it's because we're not worthy of his attention. And the reality is that very often this problem emerges even before we utter the first tefillah in a particular situation. There's sort of a convergence of theological challenges. When do we daven well? When there's really a crisis, especially a personal crisis. Something in our family, somebody's sick, chas v'shalom, whatever it is. We're in a state of personal crisis. And it's then that we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And by the way, it's then that the lack of response is potentially most damaging. Right? If I ask for something stam, but I asked for a particular situation and I didn't get a yes, that's when I have. But we have to realize that even walking into that, I'm already walking in with why is this happening in the first place? Why would God allow this to happen in the first place? And the first thing that needs to be taken off the table, is that the fact that something difficult is happening in my life or in my family's life, the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to be responding right now and not responding to my tefillah, cannot be connected to who I am. Certainly not in a fashion that's A equals B. We do believe in such a concept that when something bad happens, I have to examine my actions. The Rambam says it's cruelty. It's cruelty to oneself to not examine one's actions when something difficult happens. But to assume that the reason why I'm having all of these family issues is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't like me or doesn't care about me has absolutely no basis, and in fact is contradicted by the entire book of what Sefer contradicts that theory in the most blatant terms. No, you don't need Eov. Eov, oh my God. They tried some reason when I was in like 12th grade, they decided it was a good idea to teach us Eov. I didn't understand it as a 12th grader. I don't understand it many, many years later. A book you're much more familiar with deals with the question of how your families go when you're very righteous people. Brazius. Could you find a group of people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loved more? That had more tzaras in their family? Oh my God. I mean, it's not funny, but it is. It's that people would say, Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't like me. I'm having a problem. One of my children is having a problem. One of your children? Okay, one of your children. Is there any family in Brachus that has normal, what we'd call shalom bayis, without tremendous challenges, that has a normal family situation where no one is either kidnapped or goes so far off whatever derech would be that we can't even fathom that level, Esav level, murder? And these are people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loved dearly. The pain of infertility, one of the greatest challenges that someone can go through, that a husband and a wife could go through. And it can't be minimized at all. But to suggest that that situation is there because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't care, and a person is entitled to feel whatever they feel and can't be judged, but logically, to open up a chumash and to say that the people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about are the ones who have children easily, and the ones he doesn't care about are the ones who struggle to have a family. What is that? By the way, I would add one more point, and then we're actually going to start, or maybe next week. I'd add one other point, that this attitude is not only important to use when we face our own difficulties. And again, one should examine their ways. One should try to ask, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending me a message? One should try to ask all of these things. But to come to the conclusion, the Medrash actually says, the famous Medrash, Gemara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was nisave letfiloson of the Imahos. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, what's the word for nitaveh? He desired, it's a stronger word than that. I'm trying to think of what English word is the right word. It's strongly desired. He yearned, probably is the best word. He yearned for the prayers of the Imahos, so he didn't allow them to have children right away. Not right away, a long time. Desperate. Now that theological concept is itself difficult. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would do that. He wants my prayers so much, so he should be meichel on his desire for prayers and help out his kinda so that they don't have to be in such crisis. That's also challenging. But again, I'm not dispelling the fact that they are theological questions. I'm dispelling the fact that because one situation is desperate, therefore it means HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't love that person or doesn't want their tefillos. The opposite seems to be the case. That the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you, the more that they want you to turn in tefillah. And it's important, and I'll end with this before we give our first approach, to think about this not only when we have our own struggles, because it's always nice to remind ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, but even when other people come to us, it's not uncommon to feel a little bit nebuch about the person who comes to my door for tzedakah, comes to my door with a terrible medical problem. It's not uncommon to feel that I'm very heroic if I not only give them a few dollars, but I even say take their name for a tefillah. But we have to consider the possibility that the person who's facing the tremendous difficulty, they need the surgery in Eretz Yisrael and they're coming in for the money, that the reason why they need that is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves them so much that he wants to hear from them. So it's a shift of thinking of the person in front of me being somebody down on their luck and somebody that I'm obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu's beloved, and on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to pray for you, and on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to give you some money. To start imagining that the person standing on the other side of the doorway is the one who HaKadosh Baruch Hu really loves. To allow that to affect the way we think of whether we should support them, because this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's beloved, and how much a parent appreciates if we help out their child, their beloved child, and not only to daven for the person, But to remind the person that their tfilos in a proper way, not in an insulting way, but if it's a topic that comes up, that their tfilos are obviously very, very powerful. We should ask them for a bracha. Now, some of them give us these unsolicited, okay, shouldn't put that down. But just realize that the bracha that they give you is likely coming from a person whose entire life was turned upside down because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted their tfilos so much. How powerful that tefillah might be from the ani, and we spoke a few times ago about the power of tefillah of the ani in the first place, the person who realizes they have no other place to turn. With those introductions in place, that we don't know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does what he does, that these conversations are important to just have, and they're not ultimate answers, but they help us, especially when we learn them out of context, when we learn them in a time not of tragedy, to remember that there aren't any wasted tefillos anyway, because the ultimate purpose of tefillah is not to get a yes, and to recognize that we're not talking about whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us or not. The opposite may be true, but certainly we're trying to discuss in that relationship, why does he say yes and why does he sometimes say no? As we began with, I think the simplest explanation is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu simply sometimes has other cheshbonos. If you look at the first source, the Medrash says, Pa'amim sha'adam mafgiya b'tfila v'nana. Sometimes you, mafgiya is a word, we have that in Parshas Vayetze, vayifga ba'makom, vayalen sham, Yaakov Avinu, that's a powerful type of tefillah, where you grab onto HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You do your best, say, where are you? Pa'amim shemafgiya ve'eino nana. There are times when it's prayer, the same prayer. By saying mafgiya, it means that's the same level prayer, level 10. There are times where you pray at level 10 and you're answered, and there are times where you're answered prayer and ve'eino nana, and you're not answered. Certainly you're not answered as you hoped, as they put in the brackets of the English. She'ein l'cha she'sider tfilos v'sachanunim yoysem Moshe Rabbeinu. There's nobody better at davening than Moshe Rabbeinu. V'hein karvo yamecha lamos. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, there are other factors other than your tefillah that have to determine this. Did he really sin by the rock? How much? Was that enough? You're talking about the best mispalel in history. The best mispalel, the guy got us off the hook for the Chet HaEgel, okay? And the Chet HaMeraglim, the best mispalel in history, the most worthy person in history, the person closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in history. And this was his life mission, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, mein kind, there's other factors involved here. It was not your tefillah that made that difference. HaKadosh Baruch Hu simply sometimes says no. And in the Rishonim, HaTefillah Pa'amim Har Be'yaseh Oso Adam, Kemosha Ra'ui, Ube'esh Ra'ui. Sometimes a person davens, and he davens the right tefillah, in the right way, at the right time, velo tekubal hatefillah. And God simply doesn't accept it. Velo mitzad chet hamitpalel. And it may not even have to do with any chet that you did. Perhaps that was Moshe Rabbeinu. Ele shelo yaskim bazeh ratzon Hashem Yisbarach. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu just said no. It shouldn't be that difficult for us to understand that sometimes the answer to a child's request is simply no. Kadosh Baruch Hu calls us his children. We're not actually his children. But it's helpful to look at a parent-child relationship to understand why sometimes he would say no. One of the gifts of having a child doesn't mean that one can't understand a Kadosh Baruch Hu if they're not blessed with a child. But one of the gifts of having a child is to begin to understand, to play God a little bit. To understand what it's like to be on the receiving end of requests, most of which are ridiculous. Most of which, where is it? But I'm an adult. Compared to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're all 2-year-olds, we're all 3-year-olds. And we have a meltdown when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no. But we have to recognize that compared to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's thinking, we're toddlers. We're toddlers. We're not supposed to understand. We're not able to understand all of the cheshbonos. And we have to realize that a no, there are a million reasons why he might say no. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't continue to ask. And it doesn't mean that he gets mad when we ask. But it shouldn't be shocking. If he would say yes to everything we'd ask, we'd be in a lot of trouble. We have no idea what is good for us. We have no idea what's coming down the road. We can't plan. A two-year-old says they want to stay up late. You did a few nights ago, but the next morning there's a plan. We all have to get out of the house early in the morning. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what's happening tomorrow morning, so he's able to make a good decision as to the question that I ask now. The concept of misplaced tfilos, that we sometimes are davening for things that are very, very, very harmful for us. Rabbi Soloveitchik, who was always very self-revealing, Rabbi Soloveitchik would speak about some of the misplaced tfilos that he had offered during his life. And the most powerful was when he was in the University of Berlin, and he saw in the early 1930s that things were going south, and people were talking about the fact that maybe we have to leave Europe. And leaving Europe in the early 1930s was basically religious suicide. Religious suicide. And how he said how many times he davened to be able to stay in Europe, to be able to remain in Europe, to be able to be there amongst the tzaddikim, amongst the Torah communities, that he shouldn't have to be exiled to America, which was happening to certain people. And Rabbi Soloveitchik said, that saved my life. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu had listened to my tefillos, I probably wouldn't have survived the Holocaust. You don't have to have such extreme examples, but of course we know they probably exist in our lives also, that we ask for things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows are not for our good. And we actually acknowledge that. We actually acknowledge that in our tefillos. For example, at the end of Birchas HaChodesh, source number 3, where we say, Chaim shetehevanu avas Torah v'yirashamayim, Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us the love of Torah and fear of heaven. Chaim shiyimalu mishalot libeinu letova. He should answer the things that we ask, our heart's desires, for good. What do you mean for good? The Lashon here doesn't come from Birchas HaChodesh. You should know that the text that we use for Birchas HaChodesh, the text that we say after davening, Elokai Nitzor, the text that we use at the end of Yom Kippur, that Eini Kedai, and all of these things are actually in the Gemara in Brachos. The different Amoraim had a practice of adding, I think it was actually Tanaim or Amoraim, I don't remember, sorry, had a practice of adding their own thing after Shmoneh Esrei. There wasn't an Elokai Nitzor Lashoni Meira. Every great sage had his own prayer that he would say every day after the davening, and it lists about 7 or 8 of those chachamim and what they said. And they were so good that one of them we adopted for our own Shmoneh Esrei, and then we took the other ones and we put them in different places in our tefillah. So this is actually part of the Gemara. The Gemara says that there was a particular Tana who would end his prayers by saying, Chaim shimalu mishalei lebeinu letovah. So says the Rashash, one of the commentaries on the Gemara, why would he say letovah? And he answers, because he admitted that he didn't really know exactly what was the best thing. Shema Koleinu, the prototypical prayer. Shema Koleinu, Hashem Elokeinu, Chus Rachim Aleinu V'Kabel Rachamim, Uveratzon Es Tefilaseinu. What does that mean? Kabel Barachamim, Uveratzon Es Tefilaseinu. It's very strange. We come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a very, very strong note. Shema Koleinu, Hashem Elokeinu, Chus V'Rachim Aleinu. We say, I asked you for 12 things so far. This is the 13th middle bracha. Answer me, let me. It's strange. The whole bracha is very strange because we asked them already. So this goes back to the previous question. Why are we asking them again for exactly the same? No, really, really. Right? But okay, we'll leave that. Then we say, Kabel V'Rachamim Uveratzon Es Tefilaseinu. Accept with mercy and with desire our prayers. Kel shomea tfilos sachar nimata, because you are a God who listens to prayer. Umilfanecha malkeinu reikam al teshiveinu. Very strange phrase. And from before you, from this whole thing, don't let us leave reikam. What does reikam mean?
Empty.
Seriously? I just asked for 12 things. And now I'm saying, give me something. Yeah, I'll take anything. It's very strange. Don't let me leave empty-handed. So one of the understandings is that we're saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't want you to necessarily answer everything in exactly the way I was thinking of it. The brachos were established by Anshei Knesset HaGedola. We don't have to be so worried that they were asking for things that were wrong. But my own kavanas and my own additions and my own... You don't have to actually say yes to everything. I want you to accept them with rachamim and ratzon. If it's good for me, let my prayers be helpful to get it. If it's not, don't let me leave empty. I'd like to know you heard me. But I'm not looking for every single thing. Rabbeinu Bachya in Chovos HaLevavos brings the prayer of what he calls Chassid Echad, one particular Chassid, who says, if in my foolishness I ask for something that is not good for me, petitioning you for that which will not improve me, then your lofty decision is better than mine. He actually included this before he started to daven. I will therefore leave all my concerns to your abiding decree and highest providence. And then he went and he asked for specific things. The question that this all raises is if we realize that sometimes our tefillos are misplaced, we realize that we don't really know what to ask for, so why do we ask at all? Wouldn't it be better and much more convenient and shorter just to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do what's good for me. Right. That's it. I could get out of all these particular requests. I don't need the Tehillim lists. I don't need the names of soldiers. I don't need anything like that. I just say, do what's good for everybody. That'll be our last question here. It's a good question. It's very hard to find an answer. So I saw in, they're coming out with these Sfarim, one after another, from Avigdor Miller, Zichron Levracha. So in the Sefer of Avigdor Miller, on his different Shiurim on Tefillah, he gives an answer which is very, very compelling. No answer deals with every theological question, but he basically says the following. He says that Tefillah is a type of Hishtadlus. Hishtadlus means human effort, right? We often wonder, how much Hishtadlus should I have? And how much tefillah should I have? We usually pit them as opposites. To what extent should I go after it? And to what extent should I just pray for it? That's incorrect. That's incorrect. This pitting, how much should I do versus how much should I pray, it doesn't make any sense that those are two different kinds of things. We live in a world where whatever happens to me, the response is to call somebody who can help. I don't have any idea what to do to fix my car. I don't need to, because this is chaverim. So what do I need to know? How to fix my car, to change a tire. I wouldn't know the beginning of how to change a tire, right? So should I say the following? I get a flat tire. I get a flat tire. And then I have this theological challenge. Should I fix it myself or should I call Chaverim? No. Calling Chaverim is how I get it fixed. Because I don't know how to fix a car. I'm a Jewish guy. I don't know how to fix a car. I called a few Jews who do know how to fix a car. That's what I do and I call them. Right? This idea that calling for help in a difficult situation, that's a pre-cell phone reality. Today we understand that wherever I am, no matter what I do, I can always use my phone to call someone who actually knows what they're doing to help. Why is tefillah any different? Tefillah is a kind of hishtadlus, is a way that I go about fixing the problem. I call in the expert. I call in the one who can help. It's interesting, when Yaakov Avinu splits in a few weeks, he splits the camp, right? He prepares to meet Esav, so he does three things. He splits the camp, and he gives a matana. He does diplomacy. He prepares for war, and he davens. And usually that's the way it's said. Like, he does his stuff, his human stuff, and he davens. It's interesting that the Medrash and Rashi puts davening in the middle of those three things as they're listed. It's not that he did everything he could, and then he prayed to God. Praying to God was one of the things. You call in mercenaries. You call in somebody. That's Hishtadlus.
The question is, ultimately, how different should our hishtadlus from in tefillah be from hishtadlus in typical human effort? In other words, if I am putting in, I decide, based on advice that I get, based on my own thing, based on what my wife tells me to do, I decide to deal with a problem in a certain way. And I'm going to exert typical hishtadlus to get that done. I'm going to get this thing, I'm going to do that thing. I pursue. For example, right, I want to buy a new house. So I'm not just going to say, let a house fall from Shemayim. I'm not even going to say, whatever the first house is that gets listed that I get a call on, I'm going to take. No, I'm going to put in a lot of hishtadlus. I'm going to treat it, I go about my life assuming that I need to pursue a particular goal if I want to get there. To go house hunting for 3 months, and yet on the prayer side, to just be praying every day, get me something, is completely inconsistent. It makes me believe that my hishtadlus is on one track, and God is on a completely different track. But Miller suggests, and I think this is very compelling, that if the way I carry out hishtadlus is a particular way, if I go after a particular home, if I as a single person go after a particular shidduch, then it's perfectly okay at a certain point, if I'm putting all the effort, if I think this is the right person, and I am working so hard to make this relationship worth, and then to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, get me somebody, get me the right person, that's not real tefillah. Now, yes, there's an acknowledgement. In the back of our minds, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know what, in the end of the day, I'm not really sure, so please. But to not pray for things that I'm doing, to separate my prayer and my actions, means to really take HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of my everyday life. So, even though we know that sometimes we ask for things that are wrong, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. He wants us to acknowledge that we don't know everything. He wants us to be willing to accept a no. But he wants us, just as we go after particular things, he wants us to pray for particular things. He wants us to spell it out. He wants us to involve him in our everyday life, recognizing that Tati's not always going to say yes. Tati's sometimes going to say no. But that is a much more genuine way to pray. Okay, so we did our four introductions. We gave so far one basic approach to tefillos that are answered no. And that is that he knows a lot of things. We knew that beforehand. I didn't need to tell you that. But he knows a lot of things. The mashal of the children, the examples in our own life, and even in the lives of greats like Rabbi Soloveitchik, that we have to recognize that not everything that we think is really what's good for us. Take one question and then we'll end. Yeah.
When the rabbi said, we're not really his children, what does that mean?
Well, we're not physically his children. We're not fully his children. We can't understand. But he uses, throughout the Torah, God says a lot of heretical things about himself. Lots. He has hands, he has fingers, right? He gets angry. He, all over the Torah, God says things that if I would say them, they'd put me in chayim. But he's God, so you can't put him in chayim. What are you going to do? So God is constantly making, God constantly gives us examples from our lives, from human existence, to make him more relatable. It doesn't mean that he's really our father, not really in any way, and even that, but what he's saying is, I know that you can't understand me, and if you can't understand me, you can't have a relationship with me. So use things that you can relate to relate to me, even if they're not truly correct. So I don't have a hand, I don't have a finger. And if you really think that I have a hand, the Rambam says you don't go to Olam Haba. If you really think I have a body, I don't go to Olam Haba. But if temporarily thinking that I have a hand makes it easier for you to daven for me right now, so use that as a mashal to understand me and just acknowledge that it's not actually the fact, and that's the acknowledgement that I gave. Till next week, all.
Thank you very much. Wow.